All right, our session this morning runs loosely under the title of the translation of Bach cantatas, or the translation of the libretti, of course. And but so that you realize a little bit of the method, or the, let's say, the rationale, the motivation on my part for bringing this presentation at all, is not to try to make translators of Bach cantatas out of you all, because that's probably one of the most difficult things that I know of right offhand to translate. So I would not recommend that particular thing right off. But I would say there are a number of shorter or simpler motets, little pieces that you might be interested in performing with your choirs. And I know a number of you have at least a smattering of knowledge of German, and you certainly speak English very well, and you have a sense for rhythm and so on and so forth, some of the things that I will be talking about here this morning. And without underestimating the difficulty, I would want to encourage you to consider the possibility of doing some, let's say, some minor translation work yourselves, wherever you can really feel good about it, at least after considering some of the standards, methods, procedures, and so on that my wife and I go through when we do our translation work. I must preface really the things that I have to say here this morning by saying that it's absolutely unfair that my wife is not standing here at my side and giving at least part of this lecture, if not a good part of it, because she is certainly the most important, I would say, the most important part of our translation team, if you will. We do translate together. It is a teamwork, but she has a very special ability to get right at the heart of a particular phrase, even if it's a very difficult one, and able to formulate that. And the more you get into these kinds of works, the more you realize that that is really the essential gift. The other parts of it have to do with musicality, considerations of things that any other good vocal music should have, and just good common sense, and of course a lot of patience to go back and reappraise whatever it is that you're trying to do from a number of different points of view. And when you've done that, what will come out is either something that you will say, it's impossible, I can't do it, and then you'll put it aside, or at least you will say, okay, as far as I can see, that's not bad. Okay, so I would just want to preface what I have to say here with that. On the screen, I have, not in the order that I will be dealing with the things here this morning, I have a number of considerations, let's say, as to why we would even be doing the translations, and I would even go precede the point number one here by simply saying that if we are talking about communicating the gospel in church services, in liturgies, communication is of prime importance. I am the first one to say that I think that music that was composed in German is going to be more correct, more right, and so on, just to do it in German. Yeah, but wait a minute, what if no one understands German in your congregation? Okay, so there we're talking about the principle of being willing to not sacrifice your standard or sacrifice what you know is right and better, but simply to be willing to be simple for the gospel's sake. I don't come to you with lofty words of, you know, and so Apostle Paul. Okay. So, the point Roman numeral one, accessibility for today's audience. This is an important consideration also from the point of view that concepts, words, have changed over the centuries. And some things need to be, so to say, they need to be approximate, they need to be transferred into our culture rather than just take some Baroque term and just say, bang, there's what it means, you know. Don't know whether some of you caught that in the little Graupner solo cantata that I sang the other evening with seinem Jesum küssen, you know, that I would kiss my Jesus. I mean, it doesn't mean kiss my Jesus, as we would say, you know, today in normal use, but it has to do with greeting, even in the point, from the point of view of doing homage and so on. Well, okay, so there would be one little example. Point A under Roman numeral 1, are we going to use a translation for concert purposes or for a church service? It could be for concert purposes. If you don't really care about the theology and so on, use any translation you want, as long as it makes good sense, I suppose. But if you're talking about a church service, you're going to be concerned then with some of the points that we will see under Roman numeral 2. And there it gets more critical. And you notice I have the words listener or participant. If you are a listener, of course, if you have an English translation in front of you, we're assuming the people speak English and not German, or they don't speak it very well. You know, in our programs there last Sunday, we had the translation printed out so that the listeners or the worshipers could be following along with a degree of accuracy, catching the essence of what was being propagated. What about the many cases, the thousands of cases across our nation? Here I'm going to say something very strong. the people in universities, I have none in particular, well, sure, I have some in mind. They perform, say, Bach cantatas, and they can pronounce German very well, or at least in their estimation. They can do it very well. And so they stand up very proudly and they sing their German. I say, what? I don't need a translator. You know, I could do it in German. Or they can even go so far as to say, you know, I've had a year or two of German, you know, and so I know basically what it's saying. Oh, if you haven't caught that from some of our sessions here, from Robin and some of the things, that Robin Lever and some of the things that I've proposed to you, the subtleties are enormous, and you don't get it all just by knowing that it's sort of Magnificat, you know, or Agnus Dei, you know, good. You'll know what those words mean, but you don't know what all the little subtleties are. And so I want to propose to you that even for the sake of the person who can sing in German very well, that even they, by having an English translation that is of a certain quality, that this is going to aid in the integrity of the performance, in the effectiveness. How can you project an idea, express an idea, if you don't know what in the world it is? That's a very simple matter. There are various uses for the translations. It could be printed in programs. It could be used for devotional purposes. It could be used for all sorts of things. And so I would want to propose that there are a number of reasons for the translations. And of course, for study purposes, as we have seen here with, for example, Robin Lever's presentation yesterday morning. I mean, this is quite valuable if you can have an English translation at your disposal. And I also want to say that the primary English translations, those that were done more, you know, sort of the complete translations, Drinker and Terry and so on, these are really quite old, meaning that they were products of their time. They served an excellent purpose. We are indebted to them for doing those translations. So we're not underestimating the value of those translations at their given times. However, I think that we all realize, if we've struggled through Drinker translations, for example, as valuable as they are out of date. And there are other distinct disadvantages, such as the changing of rhythms and one thing and another. And even theologically, they were not exactly, perfect. Not that anything can be perfect. Roman numeral 2, dealing with the original texts, You will, of course, need to deal with, in your translations, you will need to deal with the texts from a literary point of view. In other words, what kind of literature was it? What style of literature is it? What are the characteristics of that original text? Linguistically, what style of language is being used? Is it sort of folksy kind of poetry? Is it elegant high poetry? Is it very direct? Is it indirect? And so on and so forth. So that when you do your translation, if a text is very, as the Germans say, handfest, you know, solid, sturdy, that you don't come along with a flowery, elegant translation that may be in itself, for all I care, beautiful, which is a matter of taste, but it doesn't fit the character of what Bach was dealing with. And I think that's an important item. So if we're making the translation, we need to be making it from a literary and linguistic point of view accurate. And what are the theological characteristics of that original text? We've heard a lot about Lutheran theology here, also, especially just in the last hour over in the library. It was no accident what was being put in those texts, by and large. I'm not saying that these texts were perfectly conceived from a literary point of view. I think this would be a gross overstatement, because I think that many of the cantata texts are not absolute literary masterpieces. This is not to say that they are not good. But now when we come to the real thing, so to say, we come to the actual translation, and let me clear up a bit of a misnomer here. Most of the time, what we are dealing with is a version and not a translation, especially if you're talking about a singing translation. See, now, I can point it out right now, there are various styles of translations. There is just a literal translation that would be sort of word for word, you know, this word means you, and this word means death, and this word means, you know, and you just translate word for word, more or less. Then there is that same kind of a literal, very literal translation that will have the word order, so to say, a little more idiomatically English. And then there's another version that would be for, let's say, that is more literary, that you might find in for program notes. It does not have to be singable. And then there's another version where it would have to be singable, and I'll point out some of the characteristics that are necessary there. And so you see, there are various kinds of translations. And especially by the time you get down to the singing translation, it is almost impossible to deal with a genuine translation, because there are compromises that you have to make in order to make the thing workable. And how you make those compromises, I will deal with that in just a moment. Because the concerns in our version have to do with accuracy, of course, accuracy. You want it to be accurate, but you also want to make it effective. Because maybe if you're only accurate, the effectiveness is in jeopardy, because you've been so accurate that the people can't understand it. You can't see the forest because of all the trees in the way, all those accurate words that don't make sense. So you have to do something there for the effectiveness and for the appropriateness. Sometimes if you know the day of the church year for which a text was conceived, although there may not be a direct reference to the gospel or the epistle reading or whatever for that day directly in the text, it could be that as you are translating, as you are formulating your version, that by knowing that, it will help you to sort of color that text in a certain direction. And sometimes for the sake of the things we will be talking about in a moment here, where you're having to make your compromises, you will make wiser decisions. Perfect decisions, there is no such thing as a perfect decision in translation work. And now the principle of compromise. The compromise, you have to, of course, bury your false humility immediately, because there will be people who will be able to take very cheap pot shots at you, because you don't have the word death under the word Tod, and you don't have the word Leben, life under the word Leben. And if you notice, there are two syllables in the word Leben and one in the word life. Now what do you say? You know? Life? You have to do something with it. Now, how do you make your compromise? Okay. Now, the next four Roman, the next four letters, these will be the three, and actually then essentially the four main areas of consideration in the translation, were the letter A, the literary. You, of course, are wanting to make your product from a literary point of view to be pleasing. If it's unpleasing, I don't care how full of good information and theology it may be, if it's ugly, no one will want to sing it, and certainly they won't want to sing it, they will not sing it with joy or pleasure. And of course, you must be concerned with the theology in your version. Thirdly, you must be aware of the affectus, the affect. There will be moments. Let me give you an example. The soprano aria in Cantata 64 that we heard the other evening. You know, was die Welt in sich hält, and so on. This one says then in the second phrase. The first phrase says, what the world holds for me, and the second phrase says, is like a vapor passing, is wie ein Rauch vergehen. Well, literally, it says a Rauch, it says it's like a smoke dispersing, okay? But to talk about smoke, you know, I mean, I know some of you have no trouble with that, you know, because you're surrounded by smoke at various times of the day. But it doesn't always disperse, you know. But when you talk about a vapor passing, I think that is sooner possible, like a little cloud that, you know, a vapor that passes by. So you see, it is very important, not the first time around, the way it's used in this aria. Oh, the first time around, you could put the word order almost any way you want. But you have to make sure that you go on in this aria and see the places where she said, where the soprano sings, you know, passes by or disperses. And on that particular word, you have to have a syllable, the strong syllable of your verb, so that you know, so that you will be able to relate your translation to that affect, that affective moment that will be really sounding like something that is passing away. Ta-da-da-da, ta-da-da-da-da-da, you know, as she does so effectively in that aria. That's one small example of this affectus idea. And believe me, this is one that sometimes after you get all done, you think, with your translation, all of a sudden you notice, oh my word, here's the word, well, probably not Freude, because joy, you would have long noticed it, but there will be some affective moment that you have somehow skipped over, and everything gets turned on its head, and you're almost back to square one, except that you do have a notepad in front of you. Other than that, everything else starts from the beginning. Letter B, musical considerations. Rhythm, accent, time values. Let me give you an example of how not to do it. I don't even know who the translator is here, but it's from at least the English. It's from the Vakantata 131 that we're doing right now, in the version that I have. I don't think it's quite the same one that you have. At any rate, there's no ill will meant here. But it says, where it says, aus der Tiefe ruf ich her zu dir. And it says here, from the deep, Lord, cry I, Lord, to to you, to thee. Now, of course, that word order is leaves something to be desired. You can, I'm sure, find examples in our translations where you say, my, couldn't they find a different word order? Well, chances are we couldn't, you know. But here in this case, where it says, ruf ich, you know, call I, or cried I, it is literally, call I, or cry out I, Lord, to thee. If you just change those two words around, it makes beautiful sense. Rhythmically, it's quite in order. The accent is right. Here, the way it is on the page here, this is not a good accent, because we don't say on a weak beat, cry I to you, unless you were an absolute egocentric soul, you know. But if you say, I cry, Lord, to thee, you know, I cry. You see, now the accent is straight, and so to say, there's no harm done. But now, you see, there has been the principle of compromise at work here, because anyone that understands German knows that the exact translation was cry I. But to make it make sense and communicate, I need to say, I cry to thee, O Lord, you know, okay? The inflection through the melodic contour. Now, there's, of course, I could use the very same phrase here if you change those two words around. And it really makes very good sense, you know. I cry, Lord, to thee. Only see, the way that melodic contour in almost every one of your vocal parts is designed, that word Lord has a long note value, and by considering the melodic contour, it makes good sense. Yes?
About the
life, and I don't remember, Laban, was that the other? Yes. One? When you have two syllables there, is it considered incorrect to go ahead and put life and then slur down to the next minute or something like that? Or we try to avoid it with a passion. Just because there are, speaking of passions, okay. About a year ago, we did a translation of the Kaiser Passion, was it Marcus, the Marcus Passion of Reinhard Kaiser. And in doing a passion translation, where sometimes you have these words of the evangelist or the Apostle Peter, whoever it is, all isolated, all out by themselves, just two words, you know, And it's easy if it says, and he said, you know, und sprach, and he said. Oh, that's very easy. But in the minute, and saying, you know, und sprach. Oh, well, wait a minute. You have an extra syllable left over. And so there were several cases in the words of the evangelist or whatever in that passion where we literally, well, let me show you what we did. There would be two notes here like this, and we would have the let's say the word is say, we would without changing any note values and without putting dotted lines all over the place to disturb the poor German singers, we just, in the English translation, we just extended let's just say that the German word was Sprachen, you know, you could let the Germans stand, and the people would be quite able to sing that undisturbed. And if you're singing in English, you would just prolong the syllable. That, in a few cases, we have done that. We try to avoid it. The publisher Hensler, because of the beautiful way most of this music looks on the page. They really try to avoid all sorts of little extra notes and that sort of thing. And this is where, in the Drinker, whenever you've used the Drinker editions, you've just been plagued with this sort of thing. You've got extra little eighth notes sort of stuck in, and others, you know, with dotted lines to make the whole thing last longer and so on. Yes?
One small clarification. Is there a school of thought that perhaps was in effect when this translation of trying to redirect? when you are, for example, when you I call Lord to be rather than call I Lord to be, are you going against the whole body of thought that it must be more direct?
Well,
in translation.
I don't know if we can even talk about schools of thought in a way, because there are so many people who are let's say appreciative of Bach, and they consider themselves to be sort of Bach authorities and fans and whatever it is. They tend to look down their nose at any translation, so it doesn't really make any difference what you do; it's always going to be wrong. Okay, so, I mean that. I really mean that, and a sense or a concern for communication in ministry is absolutely way down the ladder of priorities, and so. So an art. I mean, you don't translate Brahms or whatever it is, and so you don't translate Bach either. Forget about it, you know. But I don't know. I would hate to lose all of this music to practical ministry, for the sake of practical ministry. Vocally, we need to be concerned about the singability. Now, this is, of course, in our team of in translation. I, of course, always sing everything through every line of every part, not saying that everything absolutely just falls off the end of your tongue when you sing it, but it's just, I am very, very concerned about that, because after you've sung so many kinds of texts over the decades there, you do get a little bit of a sense, I hope, for what is singable and what is not. And wherever possible in a translation or version, one should try to make the translation sound a little bit like the original sound. So if the original sound on a big high note was ah, well, try to get at an ah or an open O or something like that, or something that is closely related to that sound if possible. And now there's something that I haven't included on this sheet at all, and that has to do with rhyme. A lot of people say, well, I could probably do translation work, but I can never make things rhyme. Be assured that there is a tendency about that says, and I think we can honestly say this, that people are less and less concerned about texts genuinely rhyming in this kind of a version. But when we've said that, that doesn't mean that we should throw out rhyme altogether, because rhyme, very often, if you can accomplish it, besides all the other things first, if you can accomplish rhyme, then there is a greater degree of memorability. People remember what they're doing. It somehow helps organize the text, all right? And then letter D, every version or translation is an interpretation. This is not to be avoided, because you have to make word choices constantly. And if you have a choice of two words or three words, or because of the number of syllables, you can't take the word that you really want, and now you have two others to choose from, how do you do it? Well, according to your worldview, your theological view, et cetera, you will make a choice. And that choice amounts to an interpretation. It's not to be avoided. So this is why I want to propose that it's very important that the person doing translation work has a clear view for the things that I've mentioned here, in particular from the theological point of view. Yes, Dan.
Either a formal correspondence translation, which is almost word for word what the original says. The other is more like a dynamic equivalent, which might, as you say, do more interpretation to give us a sense of what the original author is really trying to say. The problem, though, is like in 2 Corinthians chapter 14, if it was a formal correspondence, we're talking about Titus, and he says, and his affection abounds all the more toward you. Literally, in the Greek, it says, and his guts abound all the more to you. His insides abound towards you. So, you know, in one sense, you can translate very literally, but not say what you're trying to say, according to understanding of
yes.
people. On the other hand, the more you do that, the more you're interpreting rather than really filtering the word through. It's
yes.
a difficult problem.
Right, right.
Let me just give you a few examples now of some things, because I've... but before I do so, let me give you a few points of the process. And you may want to jot this down, because I think this might be... I don't have an overhead for this. This is the process that we go through when we approach a text. And if you want to go through this same process, it very well may enable you to... you know, to arrive at something reasonable yourselves. Or at least it would give you the ability to discern between a good or a not-so-good translation. Now, these are the steps. There are eight of them. The first one is establish what the gospel reading of the day for the church year is, and or was, or is. Because those readings, and knowing what the occasion was, This is going to be of great importance. Alfred Dürr, D-U umlaut R-R, he's had very much to do with the Neue Bachausgabe. He has written a couple of little volumes on the cantatas of Bach. I think that's coming out in English, or it is already out. I don't know. I've been using the German version for many years. But in those volumes where he has a little commentary on each cantata, he always gives the full readings for the days and any hymns. They're all identified there. It's a wonderful work. Okay, so you establish what the readings are for the day. Secondly, you appraise the chorales used. So in our case, it may mean that we may be able to use a chorale translation that we've used before in some other cantatas. That has happened on a few occasions. But knowing Bach, because of the sort of backing up and going ahead and backing up and so on and so forth at certain places, you end up having to change it anyway. But never mind. But by establishing the chorales there, that will help you. And by the way, when you approach the chorales, many times that's an older text stylistically and sometimes theologically slightly than the actual cantata text. All right, the third is to consult critical commentaries in the Neue Bachausgabe, the collected edition, to consult the critical commentaries. There may be something there that will give you some insight that you need to have at your disposal. The fourth stage is to make a basic meaning translation, in as much as that is necessary. Maybe you already know what everything means, but to make a sort of a basic meaning, like a rough draft. You just sort of put down on the page literally what you feel is there, okay? And in this, you are concerned with basic theology, and you give special attention to any scriptural fragments that are in the text. So, and because many of these texts are just riddled with, they're just interwoven with scriptural references, and in some case, I'll show you one example here that is just, I say it's hilarious. We couldn't find it. What in the world this thing, death is in the dishes, you know? Okay. Oh, we found out what it was, and it's there's a footnote at that point, so, in the edition. Oh, well. Okay, the fifth stage would be a version with correct meter, number of syllables, good vowels in important places, and care for affects of various sorts. Okay, I'll say that again. A version with correct meter, correct number of syllables, with good vowels in important places. For example, don't sing long melismatic passages on oo, you know. And then care for the affects, like the vapor passing or the smoke dispensing or whatever, okay? The sixth version, or the sixth step, if you can, rhyme, concern yourself with rhyme, and fine-tune the translation, the version, and be concerned about the singability, and literally, you personally sing through it, with all the ups and downs and lengths, the short and the longs of it, so that it feels good for you as a singer. Okay? Seventh step, this is for us. We type a line by line English under the German with syllable division so that we know exactly where it all goes. Let me just show you a sheet of that sort of thing. This is what I mean, where we just take the English, put it just under the German with syllable division. It helps us then for the next step. I'll come back to that in just a second. And then finally, the final step then is to enter the text in the music. And I generally recommend the way most editions are laid out, if it's only been in German up to this point, I generally recommend that you enter the new English text above the melodic line so that it's really standing apart. You know, because usually, the original text is under the music, and if you put yours above, it'll really make it different. It'll make it optically more easy to deal with than if you put it, sort of squash it in below. Also, if there are many lines, like contrapuntal music, you know, polyphonic music, all these threads and lines of music, and if you put the English text above, it works out much better. Okay, now let me move on to some examples of things here. Now, this one happens to be from a Grautner cantata. It's the Nun komm der Heiden Heiland, the fourth stanza of Nun komm der Heiden Heiland, and the seventh. And this was just a special version for three singing voices in this particular case, in the middle and at the close of this little cantata. Now, the reason I show you this is that we are absolutely not literal here, yet we are able to get at the basic meaning and the theology that is in it. Son of God, eternally lead your life to victory, that your holy might and power strengthen this weak flesh of ours. Literally, that says, who are like the Father, lead yourself out in victory in the flesh, okay, by coming to earth, okay, so that eternally God's power in us will sort of maintain our strength in these miserable bodies of ours. Now, by changing it the way we did, we get at the essence. Also, then when it goes on to the last stanza, which is actually a doxology, I think it'll become more clear to you. We did end up with a rhyme. We were wondering at one point whether it was worth it, you know, to make the rhyme. But I think we made the right decision. Praise to God the Father be. See. Lob sei Gott dem Vater Tan, or Getan, you know? So they've made shortenings there already. Praise to God the Son we see, yeah? Praise to God the Father be. Praise to God the Son whom we see, because we've seen him in the flesh here. Now that does not say that in the most literal sense, but it brings in the idea that is there, okay? Then praise to God the Holy Ghost, using the old word ghost instead of spirit, because obviously you couldn't say spirit, you have too many syllables, and in the literal German would be Geist, and so you have to say ghost if you want that syllable. And then praise be to the uttermost, which corresponds to immer und in Ewigkeit, always and eternally. So by using the praise be to the uttermost, we arrive at a rhyme with ghost, and it works somewhat. Now, if you look at another example from that same little cantata, this would be typical for Bach too, this happens to be Grautner. I want to point out what is happening in this little verse here. The word that I'm pointing out here is the word freue dich. Okay? Well, you know, be joyful. Well, the rhythm here is a triple rhythm, you know,
Fort and Freude. Okay, now, what happens here is that you could cheat on the second syllable here. You could say rejoice, but then you're going to be running. You'll have to say, always, and well, that doesn't work either. But there would be a way of getting the rejoice on those moving notes here. But because you have this pickup here that you could utilize, but the next time he uses the text, he has no pickup. So you would just say, rejoice, well, it doesn't quite work, Now, I was kind enough to use Grautner there, but there are thousands of examples in the Bach cantatas that are like that. Let me move on, though, now to a different kind of a problem, and that is this. When you're dealing with a biblical dictum, a basic gospel thought, okay, like God so loved the world, you have had examples sort of from A to Z in your folder. You should probably still have it in your folder from our last concert. In the Grautner God so loved the world, there I made some of those exceptions, in order to, with the prolonging a syllable or whatever, in order to arrive at basically God so loved the world and so on. And here or there, I had to make a couple of little changes. And in order to arrive at that well-known biblical text. Now, some people are not content to do that when they are translating. There is a certain moment of pride there. You're saying, look, I'm a translator. I'm not just a parrot. I don't just take what is there. And so in the Telemann, if you remember, we have not "for God so loved the world," but we have "so well God prized the world and loved it." Now, I don't know whether that disturbs you a little bit or a lot. I would hope it would disturb you a lot. Theologically, I couldn't sing those words. Because God, from a theological point of view, as far as I'm concerned, God didn't prize the world, but he loved the world. So that part was true, but he didn't prize it. He didn't think the world was so cute and glamorous that, but rather it was just God loved. And there isn't anything with this prizing and so on, And there was another thought that I thought, we try to be, in our translations, concerned with inclusive language, however, not at the point of sacrificing everything that is good common sense in literature, meaning where we would have to really distort a text in order to use the word humankind instead of mankind or something like that. But we deliberately try to be very sensitive about that. But now in the second portion of the translation here of the Telemann, the words are used here. You recall the melody, "Auf das alle die an ihn gläuben nicht." At that point it says, "that all men who believe upon him not be lost or perish." Now, I personally think that this really bumping on the word "men" here, I sense that as being a little bit insulting, especially in our present climate on this matter. I think it's sort of asking for debate and trouble. And we have enough trouble the way it is without trying to. There are so many. If you try to deal with these things honestly, which I think we should, then it's going to be difficult, especially for translation work. If you are terribly concerned, you're going to spend a good deal of time trying to be just and trying to keep the theology yet in contact, and so on and so on and so on. And so if at that point, though, on top of it, you are totally insensitive to the present concerns, I think that would not just simply not be good. That's our view, and so we very much feel that there are things that need to be addressed along the in these issues. But I think, on the other hand, to absolutely turn the whole language upside down, especially when you're dealing with older works, I think this would go too far. If you're talking about a new text, writing a new text, there especially you need to be concerned. Yes.
One should also be concerned by style, whether or not it is flowery or poetical, or
yes.
If you say high poetry is over against based on
yes.
Oh. How if well, first of all, did Bach in his text go the gamut of
you find well, you will find sort of examples all along the scala here, but on the other hand, I would say that his texts tend to be more like good medieval craftsmanship. Some people would wildly disagree with me on that, but I feel by and large it's very good functional poetry. Sometimes it's not very good poetry, but it gets but it has a message, and so sometimes the text is downright blunt. And I, not that we should try to be blunt and clumsy. I don't mean that. But at the same time, I think that we should. I think a Bach translation, and there are some new ones out now. Also, those that are in the new collected Bach translations published by my publisher Hensler, that are used for more literary purposes. In my opinion, those translations, although the person doing them is a very well-schooled literary person, I feel bypasses this sort of sturdy straightforwardness of the Lutheran theology there. I struggle with that a lot. I really can't go along with it.
Very evident in your latest outburst that what you and your wife do is a very sophisticated and complex social thing, well thought through. I just think if we also we're attempting something and we're going to determine the style as well, I, anyway, would be past whatever knowledge I could even begin
well,
to bring to it.
Certainly. Of course, my main concern here is not, as I said before, to make translators out of all of you, but let me show you here some of the kinds of things. This is one of the last things that I'll be able to address here because of the lack of time, but here is the kind of a thing that you will find in some of the especially sort of ariosos or recitatives. They are called recitativo e corale. You know, there will be a chorale with a recitative, and you have these inserted texts and recitatives in between the lines of a chorale. And so Bach will in this style. Show you this first. You have the old hymn tune, ba 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 ba. You see that up here, and then ba 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 ba. Okay, now, you, by the way, you're going to get a copy of these and others. These are some fragments, some examples that I did for our international hymnology conference in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania last August, and you'll be receiving copies of those, I believe, tomorrow. But now look at what happens in between here. Musically speaking, of course, you have when you see the bass line, you'll see that the chorale has already changed musically a bit. Was helfen uns die schweren Sorgen? Chord. Sie drücken uns das Herz mit Zentner Pein. And so on. Recitative. And then all of a sudden, so as if by magic, all of a sudden you're in the middle of the chorale melody again, but not bluntly.
Was hilft uns unser Weg?
And so you have this little fragment of this thing. So now, from a literary point of view, you have this sort of thing going on as well. So when we make the translation, this is from a different cantata, but you have this where you see the little line at the side, those are the chorale, the lines from the chorale, and all of this in between is sort of like a commentary, if you will, on the chorale verses. Yet if you look at the chorale when you're translating it, you have to still make it somehow fit so that you could theoretically just take the chorale lines and it would still make sense as a chorale. Grammatically, you have to try to make the thing still make sense as it flows into each other. I mean, it is really, I think that's one of the most difficult things to do altogether. And there, if I wouldn't have my wife, I can assure you I would long since have just thrown up my hands, because this is so difficult. And you notice here what is happening. This is the Was frag ich nach der Welt. This is whatever the second or third stanza. Die Welt sucht Ehr und Ruhm bei hocherhabenen Leuten und denk nicht einmal dran, wie bald doch diese gleiten. Das aber was mein Herz, and so on. But then you have all of this in between that still has to, in a very graceful way, flow in there. It is a remarkably difficult thing. And there I have no quick, easy answers for that. A lot of hard work, and that's of course not so. I can respect it if somebody has great difficulty with that, because but the only thing where I really think it is not to be tolerated is where translators ignore this and just simply translate straight through. Don't try to make the chorale, try to attempt to make the chorale make sense in itself, and so on. That's just a real shame. Well, whatever. Our time is up here. I have, of course, lots more examples here. Maybe when we, sometime before the end, we can sing through a few of these. Some of these translations that you have actually, like the chorales in the Graupner or in the Bach, the ones that we sang last Sunday, we could actually sing them through once in English to give you a little bit of a feel for that. Yes?
Just curiosity. When you translate, do you work on a particular cantata or such form in one chunk at a time? Because I think if you spread anything over a 6 month period of time, sometimes you view things differently in how it sound and feel.
Yes. Well, generally we let's say the order comes to do this cantata by that in that time, and then you keep that in mind and you start working, and that's sort of the basic way you do it. And of course, being strictly human, we don't take things too much sooner than we must, just because of other deadlines and so on, and so there is a certain time pressure. However, I have to say that we do go back. We like to let something sit a while. We go on to something else and then come back and try to approach it as if we were someone else reading it, so to say, and singing it through. And yes, in most cases we do make some revisions at that time. And
how long did one
of these cantatas take? Oh, I don't know. I can't say. I mean, it's many, many hours, of course. I mean, just a rough literal translation. That doesn't take very many hours. But you can also, in particular, in some of those very difficult little moments in the recitatives, you just may spend hours, and I mean, you literally days on one little phrase trying to get the thing to make sense. And of course, if Bach had his restrictions that he placed upon himself, as Robin Lever was saying, and then with his genius tried to work his way out of it, that was still Bach inflicting the thing upon himself. But then now, if you come along and you have his limitations, so to say, inflicted upon you, and then now on top of it you have all of these things that were on the screen a moment ago also being concerned, that you're concerned with those things, you know, it is very, very difficult indeed. So I have a lot of understanding for anybody that says you can't do it, because it is very difficult. Yes?
My question is on, when you come into a traditional phrase such as like the Kyrie Eleison the other night, you pronounce it with a German pronunciation, would that be a standard format? Why not use a Latin? Wouldn't the Germans pronounce that?
No, the Germans would do it German, just like I did it. Yeah, we say Kyrie, you know, and they say Kyrie Eleis, or Kyrie Eleison, yeah. That's just, I would just say that because you're in a Bach cantata where the Germans would do it with a German accent, you know, or pronunciation, that it would be more appropriate there to do that. But
and there are occasions when you're going from, say, Greek or Latin to German to English.
Well, many times those kinds of phrases, you noticed in the Cantata 64, we didn't translate it. We just left the Kyrie Eleis. We just left it rather than to translate it. Sometimes, because of the way the lines sort of turn out, you will have to end up translating. But we prefer to leave those Latin or Greek terms that are within, especially the hymns, leave them where they are, if at all possible. You know, and just sort of work our way around it, let those be a given.
Because it's not only in church music that we have this problem. Opera has the same problem, trying to translate and perform and do all
that. Oh, sure. Sure. Yes, yes. Yes. Oh.
And I had another question on that. On the like the problem de-sexing languages and all those things that are coming up where we do things different in a modern style than they did it. Say even, you know, people accepting a translation of Mighty Fortress.
Yes.
And the only thing you can do to sing it correctly is to sing it in German. And you can't even put it, you have to have the isorhythmic version of the old text or
well yes. It, sure, and it could well be, too, that when you have, if you're trying to, with this particular hymn, the Mighty Fortress, you may end up with at least three different translations if you sing it isometrically, with even quarter notes, or if you sing it, isometric, or if you sing it rhythmically, pum 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 pum, or if you land on cantata number 80, which we did, and we had to somehow make sense out of it with all of the doubling back that Bach does so often in those kinds of florid kinds of settings where you have maybe, sure, the phrase of the old hymn, you know, Ein feste Burg is, and then you have all this, you know, and you have different sort of doubling backs all going on all the time, and so you end up maybe having to limit yourself not to using words of more than a syllable or two because of that sort of doubling back.
I think he's talking about our life, good staying child and life or vice versa. Let me talk about yet or nothing one.
Yeah.
Martin
Luther. Sure. I think, as I recall, I think we used the word spouse, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to look it up, though. I really don't remember. Yeah. But we did not use, in our cantata, in the Bach cantata, we did not use, of course, the translation from the LBW. It relates back to the older Ein feste Burg, the old A Mighty Fortress is Our God, that many of us know. As I recall, even the first line is literally the same as the old A Mighty Fortress is Our God. From there on, we had to, of course, depart from it. Here or there, we are able to, or let's say we feel compelled to take an old standard hymn text like Nun danket alle Gott, you know, Now Thank We All Our God of Winkworth, and just take it as is and put it in there and give her credit for it. And just say, why should we translate that all over again? Everybody knows that translation, and hardly anybody ever sings a different one. Why do we have to come along and reinvent the wheel?
You did that on that Proctor we did of Schiff the other time. But she just took a traditional translation of Lord Jesus the Father.
Yeah, yeah. I would even do that one. That's someone else. I don't even know who did it, but I think it worked pretty well, though. Yeah. Well, we have. Yes.
I was saying, it's nice stimulation again to rethink Luther and his marvelous translation. So it's just wonderful to read his translation.
Mm-hmm.
And at a conference here of Luther a couple of years ago, this man who got this book on Luther, the translator, I think this all would tie in for some of us.
Mm-hmm.
Reappreciate the man again. He was one of the
right.
Literalists in Rome.